Welcome to episode 53 of the Fredcast for the week of January 22nd, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, a winner in this year's Tour Down Under, a truck driver not being charged in the death of a 15-year-old cyclist, Salt Lake City's mayor wants mandatory helmets, Lance Armstrong Foundation celebrates its 10-year anniversary, pedaling for 85 hours to break a world record, and the next generation of bicycle? Following the news, we've got some previews of some great upcoming rides, some listener shout-outs and email, and of course, PodSafe Cycling News. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. Every week, I'll be choosing some of Cambria's best products and placing them on a special Fred's Picks page. Check it out by going to www.thefredcast.com, clicking on the Fred's Picks link on the left-hand side of the page. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome back to the Fredcast. Hey, it's great to see that the racing season is finally starting, and it started this year with one of the races that we talk about every year, and that would be the Australian Tour Down Under. This year's race was won by Swiss rider Martin Elmiger in 15 hours, 46 minutes, and 38 seconds, and it was a pretty dramatic finish because it took a sprint bonus for him to be able to take the lead away from Australian Carl Menzies, thereby winning the overall Tour Down Under by just 3 seconds, with third place going to Lars Bak from Denmark, 11 seconds back. And of course, as always when these things end, you see Australian rider Robbie McEwen of the Predictor Lotto team trying to get out there and win a stage. He actually did it in the final stage of this year's Tour Down Under, winning his 12th stage win in the Tour Down Under, and the fourth time that an AG2R rider has won overall, and that, of course, was Martin Elmiger. There was a little bit of controversy in the race when, at the final sprint, McEwen edged out sprint rival Mark Renshaw, Renshaw also from Australia. Renshaw thought that McEwen had unfairly nudged him out on the final sprint of the day. McEwen claimed that it was a windy day and therefore he had to get out of the wind and into a place where he could be clear, and the race officials judged that McEwen had done nothing illegal, thereby giving him the stage win. So again, the stage win in the final stage, Robbie McEwen takes first place, followed by Mark Renshaw and Alan Davis, all three of them Aussies. Final overall standings, Martin Elmiger in first place, Carl Menzies second, Lars Bak from Denmark in third, Martin Lloyd from Australia fourth, Gustav Larsson in fifth. In the sprint category, this year's winner was Laurent Brochard from France, the King of the Mountains, Serge Paulwells from Belgium. The under 23 category, Hilton Clark from Australia. Best overall team, the SouthAustralia.com-AIS team, and the most aggressive rider, Matty Breschel from Denmark. So it's nice to see the racing season is open and that the racers are ready to get out there. One of the things that McEwen said that he was so excited about making that final stage win because it makes him know that he's ready to get to Europe and get racing on this year's Pro Tour. And we can't wait as well. Well, if you've listened to the Fredcast for any period of time, you know that there's a couple of things that I get very energized about. One of those, of course, is safety while we're out there on the road, and another one of those is charity rides. I think that safety is one of the most important things for us, and that doing charity rides is just a wonderful way to use your cycling for the betterment of your fellow humans. And here's a story that puts both of those together and also puts it into a bit of perspective. You may recall that over the summer I mentioned that on one weekend there were two deaths in two separate MS-150 bike rides around the country. And coincidentally, in a macabre coincidence, both of those deaths were 15-year-old cyclists, very, very tragic day for cycling and, of course, for the MS community. One of those 15-year-old cyclists was South Carolina teenager Rachel Giblin. Rachel was, according to all reports from the riders, knocked over by a passing truck that passed too close, hit her, she went down, and then she was unfortunately run over. Now, the South Carolina Highway Patrol has decided not to press any charges against the driver in Rachel Giblin's death. According to investigators, they determined that the bicycle that Rachel was riding fell as the pickup truck passed her. And as a result, even though the truck was passing a little bit close, and the results, in the words of the Highway Patrol, were, quote, tragic, they didn't find any malicious intent on the part of the driver, and therefore no charges were filed. There's a lot of controversy here, because what the Highway Patrol found is directly in opposition to what a number of witnesses found. And while the Highway Patrol felt that the truck probably didn't touch Rachel, according to witnesses, they feel that that's exactly what happened, that the truck not only passed her, but actually brushed or hit her, thereby knocking her down and causing her death. In that case, while there was no malicious intent, it's my personal opinion that at least there was negligence here, and as a result that some charges should be filed, because you can't kill somebody negligently and get away with it. Whether it's a cyclist, a pedestrian, it doesn't matter. If you were negligent, if you passed too closely, even if you didn't touch the cyclist, you were still the proximate cause of that individual's falling and that individual's death, and therefore you are liable. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I haven't seen all the evidence in this case, so I'm just giving you my opinion. But what kind of a message does it send to the motorists out there when you can kill a 15-year-old and walk away scot-free? Now, I have no doubt that the individual involved in this case, the driver, a 50-year-old gentleman by the name of Rudy Robinson, I have no doubt that he feels guilty and that he feels responsible for this. But I repeat that I believe that this is sending a bad message out there to the general community that you can kill a cyclist and get away with it. By the way, if you want to learn a little bit more about Rachel and her supporters and her friends and family and how they felt about her death, I've put a link in the show notes to a tribute book, an online tribute book that was posted after her death. And to read the comments of her friends, of her family, and also of the other riders that were on the tour, it's heartbreaking, but it's also enlightening. So if you're interested, go ahead and check out the show notes. You'll find a link right there. Speaking of safety, Salt Lake City, Utah Mayor Rocky Anderson has proposed a mandatory helmet law, not just for cyclists under the age of 18, but for all cyclists. Now, there's definitely some controversy when it comes to this law. On the one hand, there are a lot of cyclists who wouldn't dream of getting on their bike without putting their helmet on. To them, it's like putting on a pair of pants or a pair of shoes when they go out and get on their bike. To others, however, while they wear their helmet religiously, they do not feel that it's government's job to tell us that we must wear a helmet. According to Rob McLeod, a member of the Mayor's Bicycle Advisory Board, quote, wouldn't it make more sense to reduce the rate of accidents than to mitigate their damage through helmets? He goes on to say, and by the way, even though he wears a helmet as a regular commuter, cycle commuter, he says, quote, helmets are an easy fix. There's no question that they help. Now, the problem is that there are also cyclists out there who never wear helmets, that they sort of look at themselves as road warriors, and they love to have the wind in their hair. It's the same argument that we've heard here in the United States when it comes to mandatory motorcycle helmet use. Now, according to the law that's being proposed, the fine here probably wouldn't be more than about $40, and of course, a judge would have the opportunity to be able to waive that fine for first-time offenders. According to Jordan Gates, the mayor's environmental advisor, quote, we in no way see this law as placing any less responsibility on drivers. We just want to make cycling as safe as possible. Jordan goes on to say, quote, pardon the pun, but it seems like a no-brainer. Now, for me, there's no doubt that wearing a helmet absolutely will help protect you in the case of a fall. Like a lot of you, I have crashed and I have had a helmet save my noggin. There's no doubt about that. And of course, you know, and I'm going to remind you here that if that does happen, anytime you have an impact on your helmet, you've got to get a new one. And most helmet manufacturers do have a replacement policy where you'll get a discount on your new helmet because you've crashed your old helmet. They don't want you wearing that old helmet anymore. So there's no doubt that they can help protect you. And I, for one, am one of those people who will not get on a bicycle without a helmet. It doesn't matter if I'm just tooling around the street with my kids. A couple of reasons. One, I think I probably have a better chance of falling in a situation like that because I'm probably paying more attention to the kids and to the what cars are coming up and down the street than I am to my cycling. And two, because of course it sets a great example for my kids. If there's one thing that drives me crazy, it's being out there on a bike lane or on a bike path and seeing a family of four come by and both kids are wearing helmets because here in California they have to, and neither parent is wearing a helmet. I think that that sends a very bad message to their kids. Now, having said that, I personally don't believe that it's up to the government to be my nanny. I don't believe that it's up to the government to tell me that I must wear a helmet. Now, the argument on the other side is, well, that may be the case, and you may be a good cyclist or a good safety-conscious person who always wears a helmet, but let's look at safety belt laws. The safety belt laws that say that it's mandatory to wear seat belts in your car have been shown to save lives, because prior to that, there were many people who simply refused to wear a seatbelt in their car. They felt that it was uncomfortable. But now, and I use my dad as a great example of this, my dad used to never wear a seatbelt. And when the laws came into effect, now he always does. And I think that that's a good thing, because you never know what crazies are going to be out there on the road, and you don't always have total control over what's going on the road. So I see both sides of this issue, but now I'd like to hear from you. I've set up a forum poll in the Fredcast forums, and there's a link in the show notes, and it says, "Talk back. What do you think?" I'd like to know what you think. Do you think that we should have mandatory helmet laws? Yes or no? Answer the poll question, and then submit your comments. And I will bring those comments to the other Fredcast listeners on an upcoming show. And if you like, go ahead and send in an audio comment. I'd love to hear from you in your own voice. The question is, mandatory helmet laws? Yes or no? Tell me what you think. You know, many of us who are cyclists wear these yellow wristbands that say Live Strong. And we do it for two reasons. We do it for one reason because, in a way, it shows that we're cyclists. Even when we're out wearing a business suit and this yellow bracelet sort of peeks out from underneath your shirt cuff. And when that happens, I typically end up getting into a conversation with somebody because they want to know why I'm wearing the bracelet. And it seems like 9 times out of 10, they're cyclists too. And I've met some great new riding buddies that way. Now, a lot of us also wear them because one or more of our friends or family members are battling cancer or have battled cancer, and we wear it as a way to show our support for cancer victims, and also because we, as a result, made a donation to the Lance Armstrong Foundation. Well, the Lance Armstrong Foundation is beginning 2007 with their 10-year anniversary. Believe it or not, the foundation was founded in 1997 and since has raised more than $163 million, including, and this figure blew me away, $60 million by selling these yellow Live Strong bracelets. I think that that is an incredible feat, and that Lance Armstrong really deserves a vote of gratitude and thanks for what he's done in raising the public's awareness about cancer. Now, he's now going one step further. And I've put a link to a video that's now on the Live Strong site. And this is called the Live Strong Army video. Lance is starting a new campaign, and he actually started it in the U.S. state of Iowa, because Iowa is one of the first states to hold presidential primaries for our 2008 presidential elections here in the United States. And what Lance described was his hope that the presidential candidates for the 2008 election will spend more time talking about cancer and will put cancer as an integral part of their political party's platforms. And you can take a look at that video by going to the show notes and checking out the link that says the Live Strong Army video. I think that we can all agree that cancer is a worthy cause. It's something that many people that we all know and love have had to deal with. And so if we can find a way to raise the awareness and get the politicians talking about it, I think that's a great thing. Now, of course, there are plenty of other causes out there. As you all know, I'm very involved in the multiple sclerosis cause. And of course, I'd like to see political candidates talking about that as well. But the bottom line is, if we can get the politicians looking at spending more time and money and efforts on research in all of these areas, we will all benefit. So congratulations to Lance Armstrong and to the Livestrong Foundation on their 10-year anniversary. Well, it is that time of the show. It's doping time. It's time for doping news. And today I've got just a couple of stories on doping, and I'll try to get through them briefly. The first is one that I brought you just a couple of days ago, talking about how Oscar Pereiro, the runner-up in the 2006 Tour de France, reportedly tested positive for a banned substance, specifically salbutamol, which is a substance found in asthma inhalers. And as I told you last week, Pereiro had the approval of the UCI to use salbutamol during the racing season, but he apparently did not file the proper paperwork at the proper time. Well, since last week when I brought you that story, the UCI has come out with a definitive statement saying, quote, "At the 2006 Tour de France, traces of this product were found in his urine. However, the results of tests during the race cannot be considered as a positive anti-doping control. Although he had medical justification requested from September 2006, proving that he indeed suffered from asthma brought on by physical exertion, Oscar Pereiro delayed providing it to this organization. This is considered as a failure to respect established administrative procedures. This serious negligence by the Spanish rider is regrettable and harms the image of cycling as a whole, although he is not guilty of any infringement." Furthermore, the UCI went on to say that they had asked the French doping authorities to refrain from releasing this negative, potentially negative information about Pereiro because he wasn't guilty or even being accused of being guilty of a doping offense because it was just really an administrative problem. So they slammed the French anti-doping authorities as well when they said, quote, "Such an attitude does not help to support the cycling community, which is fighting more than ever against the phenomenon of doping." Couldn't agree with them more. As I said last week, this was a tempest in a teapot, a story that was not a story. It's nice to see that the UCI is coming out firmly on Pereiro's side as far as the quote-unquote doping issue, although I think that they are also right to admonish him that he didn't handle the administrative details properly. So, story that really isn't. Also, following up on a previous story, we told you the story of David Miller, who was testifying in the French trial against the Cofidis team and the doping that went on several years ago as far as that team is concerned. And as you know, Miller was banned for 2 years and stripped of his 2003 world time trial title after he admitted to using EPO in 2001 and then twice in 2003, including at the Tour de France. Well, Miller has cooperated with the prosecutors in the case, and as a result, the prosecutor asked the court to acquit Miller because they felt that his cooperation was so helpful in the fight against doping in professional sport, and that's exactly what happened. Miller was indeed acquitted of the charges in the case, although it's unclear as to whether or not what the verdicts will be against the others that were in the case, and if I can find those out, I'll be sure to bring them back to you as soon as they're available. Finally, we've talked recently, both here and on The Spokesman, about the comments by UCI President Pat McQuaid. McQuaid, however, gave an interview to the German newspaper Die Welt last Friday, and I thought that his comments were important, and I wanted to bring them to you, because at least these comments I can absolutely get behind, and I totally agree. McQuaid was commenting on what effect the recent doping scandals in professional cycling might have on the status of cycling as an Olympic sport. McQuaid said, quote, "If we continue like this, we run the risk in 4 or 8 years' time of no longer being an Olympic sport. If the International Olympic Committee had to comment on our Olympic status after the Floyd Landis and Fuentes affairs, I don't even want to think what it would have decided." McQuaid then went on to say, "I don't think they'll again accept another similar crisis." So I think that he's absolutely right. Now, I don't necessarily agree that the Floyd Landis situation is a really good example, because I don't think that all of the information is in, and therefore the jury is still out as to whether or not Floyd will indeed, finally, when all is said and done, be found guilty of doping in last year's Tour de France. But nevertheless, I think the overall point is a good one, especially when he talks about the Fuentes or the Operación Puerto scandal from Spain and all of the other doping scandals that have rocked the world of cycling in recent years. And, you know, at the upcoming Olympics in Beijing, believe it or not, BMX is going to be an Olympic sport. So we've got mountain biking, we've got road cycling, track cycling, and now BMX. And if this doping continues, there may indeed come a day, I totally agree with McQuaid, there could come a day when cycling will no longer be an Olympic sport. Now, having said that, there's plenty of you out there that are screaming, yeah, well, what about the East German weightlifters and wrestlers of years past? You know, this is a different time. And I think that doping has become such a cause in so many sports that I think that the Olympic movement would be proper and absolutely well within their rights to decide that any sport that is drug tainted might be up for a sanction by the committee, or that they might want to consider even tighter doping controls, perhaps more intelligent doping controls, to ensure that the cyclists that participate in the Olympics do so fairly. Many of you have visited the Fredcast forums, and if you have, you've become familiar with Plow 13. His real name is Rick, and he's our moderator over on the Fredcast forums. He does an amazing job of keeping everything under control and keeping all the spam off and alerting me to problems there, and I appreciate that. And he also sends me news stories from time to time that are interesting, and here's one that he has a personal stake in because this is about somebody that Rick has actually ridden with. This is a story about Mr. George Hood from Pennsylvania. He did something recently that landed him in the next Guinness Book of World Records. Namely, he pedaled a bike, albeit a stationary spinning bike, for 85 hours straight. He did this last week. According to the computer on the spinning bike, that would have meant that he had burned 27,854 calories and that he would have ridden the equivalent of 1,082 miles. Now that's a pretty incredible feat. Of course, a lot of us are thinking, well, you know, it's not necessarily that difficult on a spinning bike. Go try doing that out on the road where you've got all sorts of obstacles and hills and wind and things like that. I think that you probably have a good point, but this record was specifically for stationary cycling. Mr. Hood apparently is a former endurance runner, and he really only began spinning very recently because he wanted to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. This is sort of like, okay, I'm going to show my age now. Back in the 70s on the Brady Bunch, when Bobby and Cindy decided they wanted to be in the Guinness Book of World Records by going up and down on a teeter-totter. You know, you have to find your skill, find your strength, and if you want to be in the book, this is what you do. Nevertheless, I think that what he did is really incredible. It's a very long time on a bike. Now, how did he do it? Well, according to the story that I read, in order for it to be a sanctioned record-breaking attempt, he had certain guidelines. For instance, for every hour on the bike, he'd be allowed 5 minutes of rest time, and that at all times, two volunteer observers had to be watching the clock and maintaining video cameras in order to record every single moment of the accomplishment. So there were times, for instance, when he could take a break for maybe 50 minutes because he'd accrued enough time, and during that time, he'd be able to take a power nap and get a little bit of his strength back. Nevertheless, for those of us who do centuries or double centuries, riding 85 hours straight on a stationary bike is pretty good. Although, if you think about the people who do some of the long randonneuring events, things like Paris-Brest-Paris or Boston-Montreal-Boston, they are riding for this amount of time as well, but they're out there riding out on the street. So, nevertheless, it is a record-breaking attempt, and congratulations to Mr. Hood for doing it, and thanks to Rick for sending the story to us. Finally, I want to let you know about what's being called the next generation of bicycle, and I urge you to go to the show notes and click on the link so you can see a picture of the so-called next generation of bicycle. This is called the Hyperbike, and it was invented by a gentleman by the name of Curtis DeForest. Let me explain what this thing looks like. Imagine two humongous wheels, 8 feet in diameter. Those wheels are 64 inches apart down on the road level, and then they cant inwards so that they're only about 26 inches apart at the top of those 8-foot diameter wheels. It looks sort of like a racing wheelchair in the way that the wheels are canted. Now, the rider stands in between those two wheels and both pedals with feet and with arms at the same time. The inventor describes it as, quote, crawling at 50 miles per hour and compares the experience of riding the bike to swimming. Apparently, you're able to go very fast and very long distances, and you're using both your arms and your legs to make sure that you're maximizing your body's strength. One of the reasons that this is getting a bunch of interest in the last week is because apparently NASA is also interested in the design because they feel that it might have advantages for zero gravity or low gravity environments. So imagine, if you will, perhaps a colony on the moon or on Mars, and the folks living there need to get from one place to the next. This might be a way to do it without having all sorts of motor vehicles traveling all over the place. They might be able to use something like the hyperbike. However, for his part, the inventor, Mr. DeForest, feels that the primary market would be what he calls the X generation sports crowd, sort of like the X Games crowd. Now, I looked at the bike, and I urge you to look at the bike. I'm not entirely sure that your average BMX snowboarder street luger is going to find something like this that interesting. But nevertheless, go ahead and check out the show notes and see what you think for yourself. And with that bit of progressive news, that's it for the news for the week of January 22nd, 2007. Well, with two shows last week and a spokesman yesterday, I don't have any features for you this week, so I've just got a couple of upcoming rides and events and a couple of shout-outs and listener email that I'm going to get to. And we'll start first off with a upcoming ride, actually three upcoming rides that were suggested to us by listeners Chris and Debbie. These are the Get Your Guts in Gear ride, and these rides are to support folks with IBD, or irritable bowel disorder. So it's another charity ride. There's three of them. The first takes place on March 23rd through the 25th in Texas, starting in LaGrange and ending near Austin. The second is June 8th through the 10th in the New York City area. And then the third, August 3rd through the 5th in the Seattle area. According to the website, for these rides, all routes can be completed by a beginner rider with sufficient training, yet they're still challenging enough for a seasoned cyclist. There is an $85 registration fee for riders and crew, and each rider must raise at least $1,900 per ride in order to participate. I put links in the show notes to the ibdride.org website. Go ahead and check it out. The next ride I wanted to tell you about was recommended to us by listener Gary. This one I love, and unfortunately for the Ethels out there, I have a feeling this one may just be for the Freds, and here's why. There's a Three Stooges connection. Now, I don't know about you, but from what I've found, men seem to find the Stooges funny, and women just don't get it. This ride is taking place in Lebanon, Illinois, which is about 30 miles east of St. Louis, and it's extremely unique. There's routes for pretty much any level of cyclist from 13 miles on up to a metric century. It's a pretty nice ride with mostly flat land, nice spring weather, and it's a great first organized ride if you haven't done one. So what's the Three Stooges connection? Well, it's pretty simple. When you're done with the ride, you spend the rest of the day watching the Three Stooges with the other cyclists. Again, I've put a link in the show notes to where you can find information on the Tour de Stooges, as well as Gary's own website. He's got a blog called Science Fiction Twin, so go ahead and check that out. Gary, thanks so much for sending that to us. And by the way, in case I didn't tell you the date of the Tour of the Stooges, that would be May the 5th, 2007. Now, the very next day, May the 6th, 2007, if you'd like to hop a plane from Illinois on over to New York City, is the Five Borough Bike Tour. Again, May 6th, 2007. And I've put a link in the show notes, and I'm pretty sure that I discussed this ride last year because this is one that's on my list of rides that I absolutely must do. Imagine riding through New York City, through all five boroughs of New York City, with the roads closed and you're just with thousands of cyclists. To me, that sounds like a great day. And if I could be in New York City May 6th, 2007, guaranteed, I'm going to go out there and do this ride. Go ahead and check it out. The link's in the show notes. Finally, the next ride I want to talk to you about is another one that I know I discussed last year, and it's not until June the 16th, 2007, and I'm bringing it up now in January because in the next couple of weeks, they're going to be opening registration for this ride, the Horribly Hilly Hundreds. And if you're interested in doing it, you've got to register early. Last year, it closed very, very quickly because they're limited to only 1,000 registrants. So if you want to do this ride, and there are a number of different routes, including a double metric century, which apparently is very challenging, I recommend you go to the show notes and check it out. It's horriblyhilly.com, and you can find that link in the show notes. You know, at the end of every show, one of the things that I mention is the opportunity to send me email to thefredcast@gmail.com. And while sometimes I get a ton of email and it takes me a long time to respond, and you know what I'm talking about if you've sent me an email recently, I love getting your emails because you listeners send me some of the best information that's out there about cycling. Now, a lot of it I know about in advance. And of course, I tell you that, and I still appreciate getting it. But sometimes you send me some real gems, and whether they're articles from newspapers or magazines or the internet, or whether they're new products or just things that you'd like to see me cover on the Fredcast, I love getting it. And this was just one example. It came from listener Ken, and he sent me an op-ed piece from the Winston-Salem Journal. This was written by a woman by the name of Perry Craven. Now, if the name Craven rings a bell, you've probably been around cycling a long time, because there once was an American cyclist by the name of Thomas Craven, who at one point led the inaugural Tour de Trump in 1989. Now, if you haven't heard of the Tour de Trump and you think that Trump is just some guy who has a bunch of apprentices on TV, the Tour de Trump was at one time the preeminent American cycling stage race. There was a Tour DuPont at one time, and then the Tour de Trump, and then they both sort of went away. Nevertheless, Thomas Craven was a member at one point of the 7-Eleven team, and the 7-Eleven team was America's answer to European cycling well before U.S. Postal and well before Discovery Channel. And what Perry wrote about, and I've put a link in the show notes to the article so that you can read it for yourself, but I just want to let you know why you want to read it, because Perry was talking about how she had heard about the Floyd Landis Fairness Fund, something that we've talked about here before, which is basically an opportunity for those of you who want to try to support Floyd in his defense of himself and in fighting the doping charges against him. It's a way for you to go out and donate a little bit of money and feel like you're doing something for Floyd. And it's Perry's article about why she donated to the Floyd Fairness Fund, because she has had so much exposure to professional cyclists off of the road and off of their bikes, because some of the most well-known names in professional cycling that you can think of at one time stayed in her house, because that's what you do sometimes. Sure, it's not. Sometimes you're staying in hotels and Ritz-Carltons and things like that, but you know what? When you're developing in the sport, a lot of times it's just finding a spare bedroom or a couch or just a little piece of floor in a living room that you can sack out on in between races. And so from Perry's perspective, she understands what a lot of these cyclists go through. And while she does not condone doping, and while she seems to indicate that she finds it to be reprehensible, as most people do, she still understands what professional cyclists go through. And I'd urge you to read the article. It is gives you a different perspective on professional cyclists and what they go through every single year in order to be out there really entertaining us when they're racing. Another article that came to me from another listener, this one came from listener Mark, and this one was in response to a lot of my comments, some tongue-in-cheek, of course, about cold weather riding. Now, this week I've spent time in Colorado, I've spent time in Minnesota, and trust me, I understand cold weather cycling now. It is very cold in these places, and there is a lot of snow, and I don't know how you folks do it. Nevertheless, you do. And this was sort of a tongue-in-cheek article by an author in Canada. And again, I've put a link in the show notes, and I think it's something that you're probably going to want to check out. So go to the show notes and check the link that says cold weather riding tips. I think you will enjoy. And finally, a correction from listener Krister in Sweden. Krister wrote to tell me, I just listened to your 50th show and I've got a minor correction regarding the Unibet Pro Tour team. The Unibet cycling team has its main base in Belgium, but it's registered in Sweden. The Swedish cycling community is thrilled over this, as Unibet is our first top-class international cycling team. Hopefully, this will trigger an even faster expansion of the already fast-growing cycling sport here in Sweden. So thanks, Krister, for sending that. I do like getting corrections. I don't mind constructive criticism and being corrected when I'm wrong. And I think you're absolutely right to send it, because how cool is it that Sweden has a top-level professional cycling team and that they're competing on the Pro Tour with some of the other more well-known cycling teams that are coming from some of those countries that are traditionally known for having top-level cyclists. So I say go Sweden. Well, that's going to pretty much do it for this week. But before we get to our PodSafe cycling music for this week, just a quick reminder of how to contact us. Our email address, of course, is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can check out our website anytime at www.thefredcast.com. And again, don't forget that I've posted that question on the forums about whether or not you believe that we should have mandatory helmet laws. So go to the forums at the top of the page. There's a little link that says forums, and check it out and let us know what you think. Or, of course, you can go directly to that particular question by going to the show notes and clicking on the appropriate link there. Of course, love getting your audio comments and your voicemails. A couple of ways you can do that. Our listener hotline is 206-203-FRED. Of course, you can always send us an audio comment that you've created on your own computer just by sending it to our email address. Or if you've got a microphone and you want to do it really easily, just click on that link on the right-hand side of the webpage at www.thefredcast.com. The link says send an audio comment and you'll go right into Odeo. Just use your computer and it'll get uploaded automatically to my website. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. I want to thank Cambria Bicycle Outfitter for sponsoring the show, as they always do. Make sure you check out the Fred's Picks page. Tonight's PodSafe cycling music is called Remember the Stars by Nemesis Army, coming to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Links to the music, links to the PodShow site and to Nemesis Army's website, and links to everything we've talked about on the show in the show notes on the website. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.